Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast. Much like a mustache on most men, a bit off-putting. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, whose hockey knowledge is broader than Craig Button's tie knot, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. You know, Mike, since we last had a podcast, I celebrated a very important anniversary. This day brought a lot of joy into my life, and I can say my life has never been the same since. Uh-oh. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Vaughn, you were married on New Year's Eve, and that's not for a number of weeks. But no, I'm thinking back to November 24th of 2018 when Patrick Laine scored 5 goals against the St. Louis Blues.
Oh,
believe me, my life has not been the same since, and not for the better.
I take it your wife doesn't listen to these anymore?
No, she's moved on. In fact, she's left the house to have a girl's day out with some of her friends.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I can really ramp it up.
I wanted to start off the show with undoubtedly the sort of
Let's go, law dog.
The topic du jour, last night's clusterfuck of an ending to that game. And again, I think a lot has been already said and written, but I would be remiss if I didn't just at least broad strokes point to the mind-numbing stupidity of the NHL sometimes and the terribleness of the reffing. So I'm up in the morning checking out Jets Twitter, and I noticed the NHL public relations has sort of publicly posted their explanation for why the goal was allowed. Dallas's last goal was allowed last night, and they reference Rule 3811, subsection 2, and note 2 of that, which is only pertaining to goaltender interference. And that was the call on the ice at the time last night. And essentially, it says the attacking player, if they're pushed or shoved or fouled by a defending player, causing the attacking player to come into contact with the goalkeeper, then the goal is going to count, which is ridiculous, because that was not even the issue at hand. As I noted, that's like issuing a jaywalking ticket for someone who's speeding. The applicable rule is Rule 9.6, and that's what happens when a goaltender loses their helmet. And it says play should only be stopped if there is an immediate or impending scoring opportunity. And, you know, just for reference, impending is defined as, it's not defined in the rule book, but it's generally defined as likely to occur soon. So on first blush, not only did the refs get it wrong at the time, but then after further thought and consideration, the NHL just doubled down on that, which is just wrong. So the NHL is wrong. The rule, the 9.6 rule, now that's obviously, like any rule, it's subject to debate. Now, I think most Jets discourse has said, well, there was no immediate or impending scoring opportunity because the puck came around the net, there were several passes, and then it went back to Jason Robertson, who scored. I tend to agree with that, but rules are always subject to
interpretation.
The bigger problem is the rule itself, in that if a player loses his helmet and does not immediately exit the ice, then they get a penalty. And I'm presuming that's for player safety reasons. But if a goalie loses their helmet, this rule's in place, and this kind of nonsense can occur. The rule itself doesn't make any sense. It's not clear enough in that, like, what's an immediate? Immediate, I get. I think we can clearly say that there was no immediate scoring opportunity.
No.
But an impending one, which is likely to occur soon, who determines that? And how can you determine that with any degree of accuracy at any point? And, of course, Jets fans are going to say, well, no. They took the puck around the net. There was 2 passes. The play occurred because the goalie was lying, you know, Hellebuyck was lying on the ground holding his head, trying not to get hit in the face with a puck. So, all across the board, a debacle. But, I mean, the long and short of it is, that rule needs to change, and it needs to change immediately. Given the NHL's track record, I'm sure they'll double down on stupidity, but I had to say it because it was such a clusterfuck on so many levels that at the time I was like, I don't even know what's happening here. And even Coach Bones at the end of the game was like, I don't get it. I don't understand what this is. So anyway, that's where we landed.
Okay, over to you, prosecution. Thank you, defense, for your opening statement. No, I love your passion for the rules, Mike. I mean, that's why you're a lawyer. I mean, you know, civil servants like myself are focused on outcomes. The Jets won. So emotionally and spiritually, I moved on. No, you bring up some excellent points. And I mean, at the point in time where the mask came off, I believe the puck was below the goal line. It was
right,
like literally behind the net. So the argument that there was an imminent scoring threat is not a good one to me. I do think that, you know, there are grounds to say, you know, Jamie Benn shouldn't have been penalized for contacting
Fair.
The goalie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not, I think the case is a lot more dubious to say that there is a case to not have stopped the play. So it was, you know, I think the refs seem to really want Dallas to win last night.
Yes.
My, you know, because the puck that clearly went out, they said, let's just keep playing.
Keep
like it's like 9-year-olds playing soccer. The ball goes out a little bit. It's like, keep playing. You know, my theory is that, you know, that those calls always go to the home team if the refs are staying overnight and they have to go out for dinner. You know what I mean? They don't want to make
well
a controversial
said,
call.
Angle.
They don't want to make a controversial call against the home team if they're sticking around their flights in the morning kind of thing. No, I think you bring up, you know, excellent points. I do think the hockey gods did intervene and ensured that, in both the cases against Carolina and last night, that the team that should have won the game ended up winning the game. And it didn't do much for my high blood pressure, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, much of the game, you know, so that fourth goal the Jets scored last night, I'm like, you know, a little bit of breathing
room.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, there
and,
we go.
Yeah. So I think the Jets have played pretty well of late, and maybe we can transition to a general sense. I think we haven't had a podcast since Remembrance Day, so I think there's been seven games. Yeah, so we have a decent body of work to review. I think for the most part the Jets played pretty well over that stretch, and you know, I really like last night was particularly interesting because of the shift in the lines in the top two lines. I really liked the formulation that they went with last night with Perfetti playing with Scheifele and Wheeler and getting Connor and Dubois back together and putting Gagner on the wing. Not that I'm a Gagner fan, but listen, you know, Ehlers is out and we're dealing with that. So, you know, there were some good performances. I liked our game against the Kraken. I liked our game against the Ducks. I really liked our game against the Hurricanes. Oof, that was a good one. There was some, I thought the performance as Calgary was a big chunk of meh. You know what I mean? And then against the Penguins was, you know, not great.
We got penguined.
Got penguined a little bit.
Holy understatements, Batman.
And I'll tell you, I have to apologize to you, Mike. I had a meeting on Wednesday night when the Jets were playing the Wild. Not an AA meeting. Those are a Monday. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
IPA kidding. Fridays.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But I was out, and then I'm coming home, and I watched the last 5 minutes of the game. The Jets just got rolled in Minneapolis, and I'm like, well, this is the lament of the podcaster. I have to watch this game. Like, I can't just not watch a game. Well, I didn't watch that game. So
you didn't miss much.
Yeah. I'll say I don't have much to report on that one. What are your thoughts on the last 7 games?
Yeah, and that will take us right into check-in time. I agree with the sort of sentiment. I'm aging rapidly here in the past few weeks being a Winnipeg Jets fan. You know, we were 4-3 in the 7 games, and we really only won one in regulation.
Yeah.
3 OT games, all of which nail-biters. The Kraken game, I thought we very much deserved the win and was very confident that we were gonna seal it up there in overtime. But just a bit of a roller coaster ride where the Flames game, it was, you know, statistically it was pretty even, and it was indicative to me if Mark Scheifele doesn't play well, this team doesn't play well, because he had his worst game of the season, and PLD wasn't entirely great either. our third and fourth lines, I thought, played very well. But mm-hmm. he was – I don't know what happened, but he had a bad game, and we just sort of followed suit. And the Kraken game, I just called the Wheeler game. I don't know what – if he went to flew to Germany in between games and got one of those blood platelet transfusions.
I'm all for it.
Let's I'm all for it. Do what you want. Steroid it up. But he looked like vintage Wheeler, and not single-handedly, but was very much the driver of the Jets' win.
Just to jump in for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
I totally agree. Mark Scheifele was not good in the Calgary game. But interestingly, in my notes, they created a lot of really high-end scoring chances early in the game and then had a bit of lacked some detail on their defensive zone coverage, and it wasn't even that bad. It's just the puck ended up in the back of our net when they were on the ice. I'm not saying they're without fault. I'm saying that they weren't blatantly out of place, where more like it would have been last year, but they kind of spiraled down, and then I thought Scheifele had a really good bounce-back game.
Absolutely.
against the Kraken, and he was one of the better, if not the best, Jet on the ice. So I think your point about, you know, Scheifele driving the outcomes for this team is a really, really good one. And then, you know, I'll just quickly move in. Kyle Connor, hat trick goal on Hall of Fame night. So that was really good. And then, you know, followed it up with a bit of a – it's hard to say the Penguins game was a stinker, but they certainly didn't get the push they needed in the third period. It was a tight checking game, and you know, would have liked to have seen the Jets pull that one out, obviously. But I thought 55 looked pretty good in this game as well. What are your thoughts on those two, the Ducks and the Penguins?
Yeah, I thought he was good in both. And I thought Dylan in both of these was almost unplayable. I think in the Penguins game, Pionk and Morrissey, when it goes bad, it goes really bad.
Yeah.
They're, you know, obviously they play high event hockey, and when they're rolling, it's really fun to watch. And I was, you know, to your point earlier, I was excited that DeMello would return with Morrissey. They didn't have a great game statistically and just observationally. Mm-hmm. It'll come. You know, it doesn't, yeah. Rome wasn't built in a day. But I do think that balances out their style of play is just, I think it's incongruent. Right. They're yeah. kind of the same guy. And, you know, Morrissey, we'll get into him later, but is having a banger season, but he's taking a lot more offensive risks. And that's just Pionk's game. His whole game
right.
is risk.
And that's why those two can't play
yeah,
together.
Yeah, they can't
right?
play those guys together. And so I thought that given over the, you know, the Hurricanes and Wild game, you know, I got his limited 11 to 13 minutes before he's in the press box again. We're going to have to figure out the defensive rotations here at some yeah. point. But I like what we did both forward-wise and defense-wise in the Stars game. I think that Perfetti with Scheifele, mwah.
Yeah, I agree.
Love it. And obviously we know Connor and PLD have that chemistry. But Perfetti could have had six goals in the same way that I attribute Connor's hat trick to Scheifele. And this is going to sound too much like a Scheifele fest, but it's true. He's having an incredible season. And so
I agree.
I think that at the end of the day, even last night, I thought, you know, that line, the Perfetti, Wheeler, and Scheifele line was our best forward line. And who drives that? Well, Mark Scheifele.
Yeah. You know, just quickly on the Hurricanes game, I think that one can be put up as one of the better games that we've played all season. We really clogged up the middle of the ice. We made it hard for them.
And they're a good team.
To play like they want to play. Exactly. I think they're a really good team. Now, I think they had been going through some ups and downs recently. So we may not have caught them on a hot streak, but that doesn't matter. It's a talent-laden lineup. They're a well-coached unit. We've lauded their play a number of times on this podcast over the last couple of years when the Jets have played them.
We've said we should play like them.
Exactly. So full credit to the Jets for pulling that one out. Obviously, it was insane giving up three goals in the last 4 minutes with the goalie pulled. Like, well, I hope we'll never see that again. Neither does my physician, for that matter. And then we had, you know, let's just skip over Wednesday. you know,
yep.
give the Americans their little piece of turkey on Thanksgiving. We took a little back last night on Black Friday.
There you go.
Okay. IPA eye test Friday night. I was sitting in my living room with multiple IPAs watching the game. It was a little bit frenetic. And
it was.
And for my liking, because I'm getting old, I'm like, you know, I should be loving this game, but all I am is stressed out. And I think I just want the low event hockey where a bunch of guys just skate around and check each other in the neutral zone.
2-1 games?
60 minutes. The 2-1 games and let the power play and penalty kill, you know, like that's, you know, but because this 4 goals in the first 9 minutes, yeah, and I was like crazy. Sweating. And I thought it was a good, listen, Dallas is good,
yep.
right? They're at the top of our division. They are a top team in the league. We're on the road, okay? That's a tough place. We're coming off a 6-1 loss to another division rival, okay, to come out and win that game. Listen, the Stars were lucky to get the game into overtime. And all this stuff, yeah, we unnecessarily gave them a point at the end of the game. I don't care. We left with 2 points, right? I thought we were the better team. Now, I haven't quite done all of the breakdown of the stats from that game.
Yeah, the stats don't favor... The macro ones favor the Stars, just expected goals, and it bears out. Like, Hellebuck, once again, played a really good game, and I think in terms of sort of quality chances, I think that favored the Stars. But just in terms of the play, it was never a time, I'll put it this way, there was never a time in the game where you know, that typical Jets 10 minutes where we're just being completely outplayed, hemmed in our own zone, not too many bouts of that. And I thought we played a very solid and sound road game and deserved to win. So I agree with you.
Yeah, I think we got contributions from all four lines. Like,
right.
Who were the goal scorers? There was Perfetti that was a goal scorer. There was Kyle Connor that was a goal scorer. There was Jansen Harkins was a goal scorer. Lowry. So we got there we have it. We have a goal from all four lines.
Go.
So that's really solid. And I'm just looking at the stats now. Yeah, we were out high danger chanced 18-12. They had an expected goals of 4.69 to our 2.59. So yeah,
right.
Really, really heavily in favor of Dallas. I felt the game was a little closer than that. Hard to say that we had the vast majority or the better chances, but I felt we were in the game in a very hard place to play. I think one thing for concern, and maybe we can get into this later, maybe we should move on. We'll do a quick, I want to talk about the power play a little bit, but let's do an overall MacWAC continuum assessment of the week and then get into pre-boarding announcements, and maybe we can pick up on the power play a bit later.
Okay. Mac to WAC continuum. What do you got for the week?
I'm only giving it a 5.5, 5.5.
Like,
some good wins. But for me, it was the variability in the quality of play. Listen, you can't, if you want to be up and down, we had a good start, but we can't be this up and down team. Good teams come out, they have an established style, and they impose that style on the game. We're not that team yet. We're missing, you know, a key piece, but a lot of teams are missing
a
key piece. You know, just when we think we found some stability in the pairings in our defense, we switch them up for something else. So there are some concerns, but mostly it's a 5.5, perhaps a 6, perhaps. But, you know, we lose a couple of those games in overtime. We're looking at a disastrous 7 games. So full credit to the guys for pulling out overtime victories, but the record in that 7 games could have been a lot worse with a bounce here or there, and it's for that reason I'm only giving it 5.5.
Okay, well, in a surprising reversal of roles, I'm going to be a bit more bullish. I'm going to go 6.5, albeit not a huge difference. But what strikes me is that this roster, as currently constructed, it has some high end talent. But at the end of the day, I think if we went team by team and just compared rosters, you know, our entire bottom 6 forwards are Manitoba Moose players and have been for years. And that's not saying that those players haven't progressed and that they're not doing very well in their roles in the NHL. But the expectations have to be such that with that kind of roster, you're going to have ups and downs because you've got a lot of young, inexperienced players, Hanel included, Sandberg included. I was impressed that we managed to scrape out what we did over these past seven games. You know, could it have been a lot worse? Absolutely. You know, three overtime wins can be just as easily be three overtime losses. That changes the dynamic entirely. But the long and short of it is Ehlers isn't coming back anytime soon. Yeah. So this is what we got. You know, Morgan Barron's going to come back, and I don't know if Chevy's going to make moves to bolster up the forward lineup. But, you know, even if we continue at this pace, are the Jets going to win the Stanley Cup this year? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say no. And so, but they're playing an entertaining brand of hockey, and I enjoy it. So in that way, I'm satisfied over the last seven games.
Awesome. Let's go to pre-boarding announcements.
All right. First class assignment. You're up,
okay,
buddy.
Okay. First class assignment, as always, brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I'm going to pick some low-hanging fruit here and go Josh Morrissey. I don't know how we don't look at Josh Morrissey, or as social media likes to call him, Josh Norrissey.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. I see what you did there.
Love it.
It's made the rounds.
Yes, he's been playing great. He's skating phenomenally. I mean, he gets caught up in his own end a little bit, but often that's attributable to his pairing. I think if we get, I think we can even see another level from him if we pair him back with DeMelo and let those two sort of work it out and get back on the same page. So I think he's been the best Jet over the past seven games. I'd like to throw out an honorable mention to Axel Janssen-Falbe.
Oh, nice. Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke, yes. Your excellent article on Jets lookalikes, doppelgangers. I just love what he's bringing. He's definitely a bottom six forward, but he's embraced that role.
He's not anymore.
Why is he?
He finished the game on the top line.
Well, that's not good. Listen, okay, fair enough. There was some line juggling.
Yeah, there was.
You know, throughout the game, and it seems like Bonus likes to do that a little bit. Like you see, often, sometimes after a penalty kill, he'll put Dubois and Scheifele out there with someone, just to get them. You know, so there's some juggling there, and if you know, he's probably earned that with all of the hard work he does. He's great. He's hard on the puck. He gets in the forechecking.
He's got
gets
some skill.
In on forechecking. He's got some skill. So I give him, you know what? I'm going to invite them both up at the first
place. Oh, there you go.
You know, we had some little pizza heaven last night, so I got some nice pizzas for them. It was delicious. We ordered there for the first time. Garlicky on the crust. It was delicious. So I got a pizza for both those guys up in first class. Who are you signing up to first class, Mike?
Well, I haven't done it yet this year. You had your go. I'm going Mark Scheifele.
Nice.
Yeah, I figured you're going to go Morrissey, and that was the correct pick. But I'm going Scheifele for all the reasons previously stated. I think, you know, you look at Connor's big game. I think that's directly attributed to Scheifele. He switches to Perfetti. Perfetti has his best game in some time. I'm continuing to be surprised and a tad amazed his effort and contributions on the defensive end. He really gets after it. You know, does he have some lazy shifts?
Sure.
Absolutely. Does he stay on the ice too long? Absolutely. Get off the ice, Mark.
Love it.
God, it drives me nuts. But he is by far and away, other than Hellebuck this year, I think our best player, close second comes to, or close third, I guess, goes to Morrissey. So he's coming to first class. I had Ricky Tikki Tacos last night. So he can have, it was a delicious burrito. So he can come up and have some burritos with me.
Nice. All right. Next, the penalty box.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs. I want to elucidate that more clearly
this time. You nailed
that
one.
Because last time it just sounded like I said the same word three times in a row. But clearly I'm saying Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs. All of them. They're all in the same location. 1316 Main Street. Okay. Who am I putting in the penalty box? I'm putting Blake Wheeler in the penalty box.
Oh,
I mean, listen, there are some, I lauded him last podcast. He's doing some small things pretty well. But we need more, like with Ehlers being out. Okay. We need him to step up and do more. He had the big goal in Seattle for his 300th goal. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good contribution.
Yeah.
But over the course of the seven games, I don't think we're getting enough from him. We need a little bit more. Part of the reason that I think, you know, the Shifley line, or pardon me, the PLD line slowed down a little bit, was he's just kind of like out there dumping the puck in and then getting in the way.
I hear
and
you.
Then, you know, just having the puck come in his feet and stare at the puck while someone just comes and checks him. We need a little bit more. Now, if Blake Wheeler wants to morph into third line Blake Wheeler, that's different, you know. But right now he's in our top six, and he's not number six of the six, you know. He's got to be the fifth most important guy in that top six. I mean, if Sam Gagner is playing in our top six.
Right.
But I think we need more from him. We need him to step up. Maybe he can't do it anymore over the course of 82 games, but we need him to be better while Ehlers is out, which is going to be at least the next 6 to 8 to 12 weeks.
I like it. You pound the table emphasis on that one.
I know.
So I have a small theory. David Epstein wrote a couple good books about sort of sports physiology. What I've noticed with Wheeler, his top end speed, it's a bit diminished, but I think he's lost all his fast twitch muscles. Yeah. Anytime the puck is in his skates or he has to look down or react while standing still, he looks like he's 85 years old. And I'm being facetious for emphasis, but it really is startling. Like the puck gets wound around the boards on a breakout, and it takes him a good second and a half to gather it, look up, make a decision, and by that time there's a defender on him. Mm-hmm. and the puck is usually lost. And I agree with you that, you know, if you're playing with Dubois and Connor, that's not going to be good enough. You can't be the dumping guy and wing it off the boards because you've lost track of where the puck is. So I concur with that one. I'm going to go with my man Brendan Dillon.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah, he started off. I thought he looked a bit rejuvenated. I thought him and Schmidt had some good chemistry. Their advanced stats sort of back that up. And I don't, you know, whether it's just regression to the mean, but he's looked like the Brendan Dillon from last year, if not a bit worse. He gets out of position so easily trying to make mediocre hits. There's way far too many giveaways. I think he's got 12 now in 19 games, and, you know, counter that with two takeaways. I haven't been impressed with his game. They've moved him, it looks like, ostensibly down to the third pairing. I didn't check the ice time minutes for last night's game, but it just not good enough. Same as Wheeler, right? Like we're in a tight spot, and we need everyone performing at max efficiency, and he just hasn't been. So penalty box for you, Brendan.
You know, sometimes when the team is icing the puck and the defenseman's going back, they're trying to make it look like they're skating fast, but they're kind of flailing, but they're going slow. But it's like an optical trick. But him, it's like that's when he's going fast. Like there's guys getting him on the forecheck, and they're like, you can tell they're like, well, I'm never going to get there. And then they get really close, and their body language is kind of like, oh, I could have. He wasn't, you know, playing me.
He was going full speed.
He was going full speed. So no, his skating isn't great. I mean, he's not known to move the puck really well. So yeah, he can't be. He's not a guy that can make a lot of mistakes. Like, you know, a Dylan DeMello is generally, he's had some ups and downs this year, but his game is, I don't make mistakes because I'm not going to help you out offensively. So I'm just going to play this very quiet game and make sure I don't give up anything. And then, you know, allow my partner, whether it be Josh Morrissey or whoever, a little bit of latitude to jump up in the play because I'm going to play back. So
yeah, and DeMello had 7 breakout exits from our defensive zone, which is an astonishingly good number for a game that I thought he probably wasn't at peak form with Morrissey. So, there's all that to say is I 100% agree that just the nature of their games, that DeMello is going to make the smart play and be in the right spot, and Dillon just hasn't been doing that.
All right, Mike, I got some really interesting quick stats for you.
Okay.
Did you know math is everywhere?
Okay, the Jets, when the Jets score 2 goals or less, 0 wins, 7 losses. When the Jets score 3 or more goals, 12 wins, 0 losses. And then when the Jets score 4 or more goals, 8 wins, 0 losses. Interesting.
Okay.
There's that massive threshold between goal 2 and goal 3. And something you'll like. The Jets' record with Logan Stanley, 2 wins, 3 losses. 4 of a possible 10 points. Jets without Logan Stanley, 10 wins, 3 losses, 1 overtime loss, 21 to 28 points.
Oh, you just made my day.
Coincidence?
I think not. That's right. Incredible. I never would have thought to do that. Well done.
Are we going to go to some 5-on-5, some in-flight entertainment?
Let's do it. So you've got 5 questions. I've got 3, but why don't you just run through yours, because we tend to overlap a bit on some of these.
Yeah, okay.
And we'll bang them out.
Right. So question 1, Nick Ehlers is out long-term. This will have significant implications for the team and perhaps for the city. Yes, hyperbole.
Oh, no.
I am left to ask, can we have nice things? No, but seriously.
I can answer that.
Should the Jets make a trade for a top 6 winger?
Okay, that was one of mine. Yes, but we won't. I mean, that's the short answer. I think we should package Dylan. There we go. Mm. I'm not sure what we can get for Dylan in this window and even before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, playoff opportunities, there's short windows for these. And this team, at least predicated on last year's narrative, was set up to make a Stanley Cup push. And, you know, we're in a much better position now under Coach Bones. And so we couldn't have predicted, or maybe we could have, that Ehlers wouldn't have got hurt, at least for this duration. But yeah, I'm a go for it philosopher. And so I think we should. I don't think we will, though, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, I completely agree. For me, this is a, you know, dental plan, Lisa needs braces type moment.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
We have this log jam on our defense. We have too many guys that can play at least to some level of NHL standard. And we need a top 6 forward.
Yep.
And, you know, even if we trade for a top 6 forward and he becomes kind of redundant when Ehlers gets back, that just means our third line becomes a little bit more of a scoring
yes, threat. Please.
You know, so that's what we had when we made that run
exactly
to the Western Final. We had 3 lines that could contribute offensively. And I think we should try to replicate that. I think we're better off if we make a trade. Now, top 6 wingers don't necessarily come cheap, but neither do defensemen. And other than Josh Morrissey, I don't think there's a guy. Maybe you put DeMello in there. But there isn't a guy I wouldn't trade. As much as I love a Nate Schmidt, if he gets us the guy we need, then make the trade.
Yeah, and we
make
also lose trade. $6 million off the books.
We have a surplus at defense. We have a deficit at forward. Let's rectify it.
100% agree.
All right, next question. The Jets are 7 wins, 1 loss in overtime this year. Is this a fluke or reflective of the Jets' talent? Also, 2-part question. Do you enjoy 3-on-3 overtime hockey?
Okay. Last question first. I do. I really enjoy it. There was a period last year and maybe the year prior where we'd sort of moneyballed it a little. Like every team, it all became about possession, right? Where there's a lot of circling and, you know, kill 2 minutes without creating or giving up any real dangerous scoring chances. Probably bit myopic on my part in a small sample size, but I just see that, like, you know, we get 1 or 2 shifts out of these things and the game's over, good or bad. And I really enjoy it. The shootout, I'm not a huge proponent of. I get it. You got to end the game somehow, but I do enjoy 3-on-3. And yes, our record is fluky. You know, the nature of 3-on-3 is such that, talent aside, Dallas can put on 3 players of equal caliber, so to speak, than us. You know, we probably have a bit of advantage in that front. But at the end of the day, that's not, even the Colorados of the world, and they're not 8-1 or 7-1. It's going to balance out. We've been a bit fortunate. Josh Morrissey is a savant somehow in OT, and kudos to him. But yeah, it'll balance out.
Also love 3-on-3 hockey. In fact, I think in the long term, and I don't know if it will happen, maybe when we're senior citizens, I think the league's going to go to 4-on-4. I think because I think that the rinks aren't getting any bigger. The players are getting bigger and faster. At some point, there needs to be a tipping point to say, you know, if we want to generate offense, you know, we're going to have to remove someone from the ice. And for the greedy owners, they'll be just like, it's a bunch of guys we don't have to pay.
Yeah.
So I think we're eventually not going to go to 3-on-3, but I think eventually the game will go to 4-on-4. It is such a joy to watch. It really allows the best players to be the best players. I really like it. I do think that it's hard to compare the Jets to other teams because I'm not an expert on other teams, but I do think that extra space really, really allows someone like a Mark Scheifele to really showcase what he can do and his talents. And I think some of the Jets are especially equipped or talented
That's
in the
fair.
Way that allows them to
Connor
be really,
too.
Really good. Connor is really good.
Ehlers, if he's around.
Exactly. So I think we have a bunch of guys. Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. I'm kidding.
Neil Pionk.
No, I'm kidding. I do think generally our roster is really good enough to be able to handle the 3-on-3s going forward very competitively against the top teams in the league. Now, our bottom six have been playing better. We've talked about it, and we're much higher in the league because of it. But I do think I enjoy 3-on-3, and we have the players to do it. All right, next question. Okay, the Airport Lounge has been bullish on the Jets for some time. Ooh. The stats nerds, including their fancy models, have been more bearish on the Jets and their playoff hopes. Are stats overrated, Mike?
Oh, there's a loaded question. Yes and no. How's that for...
Well, you're a law dog.
A hedging answer. So the example I'll use, and just off the top of my head, is like I look at, and I really am not trying to do this all podcast, but I look at Mark Scheifele's advanced stats this year as compared to last. Corsi, Fenwick, expected goals, war, like all really similar. Now, I think you and I would both 1,000% agree his play has been night and day from last year to this mm-hmm. year. Now, obviously, stats of that nature are not meant, anyway, I think, to tell an entire picture of a player's performance and or caliber. But, anecdotally, it is one aspect of sort of statistical measures that I think, you know, those proponents of analytics are – sometimes fall into the, well, it explains everything.
Yeah.
So it's a be all end all. And obviously I think both of us are more in the camp of, well, it's a good tool of many tools that you can use to analyze NHL hockey. And I do think that, you know, our inability at sometimes to control play, to drive play, and our heavy reliance on Hellebuck is not sustainable. We've seen that before in the past. It's not much different this year, albeit our systems are a bit better and defensively we're a little more sound. And so I think if and when Coach Bones' system fully clicks in and we can land on settled rotations, I think we have a decent shot of making the playoffs and maybe making a little run, as opposed to some of the more grim naysayers on the analytics side who have, you know, for all intents and purposes, and ostensibly written us off.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Are stats overrated? No, I don't think stats are overrated.
Sorry,
but they're not. That. No, it's okay. But they can't explain everything. You know, quantify love, you bitches. You can't. You know. I'm being stupid, but the point is this. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, but it's not a cause and effect relationship.
Yeah,
it's not a one-to-one, right? There's a correlation, which means, you know, depending on the team or whatever, that, you know, it's 0.6 or 0.8 or 0.4, however strong a past behavior is in being able to predict future behavior. And what these models don't seem to do very well is take into account the potential for change. But change doesn't happen generally, but it may happen specifically. And I think as someone that pays attention to the stats and that watches the games, which the stats guys do, and then maybe has a little hometown bias and a little desire to see the good, where others may just see a game. I couldn't imagine watching all of St. Louis's games and really having a passion for St. Louis or whoever. You know what I mean? So, you know, the stats guys, they're looking at the game through an analytical lens. I'm looking at it through a very, very passionate and biased lens, and then trying to use the stats they produce to inform my opinion on what I'm seeing. So we're looking at the games very differently. And yes, I desire the Jets to be better than perhaps some of the models suggest. But I do think we were analytical enough and we watched the games enough to see that, hey, there's more happening here than maybe your model captures. Your model doesn't capture everything.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I'll tell you what, I like huge shout out to all the stats guys, especially Natural Stat Trick, who do so much and put in so much work that I enjoy consuming and using to improve my understanding of the game I'm watching and enjoy it more. So I'm not slamming them. I'm just having fun with the idea that you know, some of these models didn't rate the Jets very highly, whereas I think we've been a little bit more
fair. Supportive and some of its
potential.
Yeah, a bit tongue in cheek. But the way I'd put it is, and I'll, you know, up very recently, Money Puck, and I think I referenced this on our last podcast, but you know, in their model, we were the 20th best NHL team. And then if you go on TSN, which is obviously Canadian focused, I think they had us at one point the fifth best team overall. Mm-hmm. Now, my opinion, we're probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're probably in the 10, 11, 12 range in terms of how we're playing currently as compared to the rest of the NHL. And, you know, that's, I think, what you and I both try and bring is a bit of both, right? Because I think any model that has the Jets 20th, I don't think is 100% accurate. But any sort of non-statistical method that has the Jets 5th overall in the NHL, I think is also flawed. So, you know, it's a give and take.
Yeah, just quickly closing that out before I get to my last two questions, which I really like. I've reread them. They're good questions. But it'll all, like the model, how much does the model, how much value does a particular model put on goaltending? So you say a particular model doesn't value goaltending extensively a lot. Well, then we end up as 20. A different model that says, hey, goaltending's a massive factor going forward. The Jets have great goaltending. We end up 5th. So, I mean, there's those human elements
in
how you build the model. So, all right. So my last two questions, or question number 4, I'll ask them just one at a time. I like this question. Would the Jets be better, worse, or about the same if they've been able to hire Barry Trotz as the head coach?
Oh, I wondered where we were going to get to that. Oh, good question. Obviously, it's impossible to know with any degree of certainty, but I can't imagine that we would be much better. I mean, I think at the end of last season, we wanted two things. We wanted accountability. And we wanted defensive awareness and a defensive system that mirrored that of, let's say, and we mentioned it, the Carolina Hurricanes. I think we're well on our way to both of those things.
I agree.
And again, this is ethereal, but like the vibes are good. How much better could the vibes be under Trotz? I don't know. I can't imagine much better. Yeah. Again, all things in and all things considered, I can't see, given Ehlers' injury, given Morgan Barron being out, I guess, you know, he's a bit inconsequential, but I can't imagine there'd be too big of a difference.
I completely agree. I think there is a possibility, because we've talked about the variability in the level of the Jets play recently, that a Barry Trotz might impact that a little bit. And that if you say that as good as Bonus is, Trotz is on a higher coaching plane in terms of quality of coach than a Bonus. I don't think that that's a particularly egregious statement or controversial statement. So if Barry Trotz is a better coach than Rick Bonus, maybe his grip on the team is such that we're a little bit more consistent. Maybe Barry Trotz doesn't get COVID and is around for all the games and can eliminate a couple of the poorly played games that we've had.
Yeah, this now year. We're fortune telling.
So I agree. It's going to be hard to imagine that this team would be much further ahead with Trotz as the head coach. I think we're in agreement there.
I agree.
All right. Question 5. After the Carolina game, Coach Bones admits he might want to play out the last 5 minutes differently next time the Jets are in that situation. Is it good? Is it good for the coach to be this candid? Can the great swaths of unwashed masses handle such honesty?
You can't handle the truth.
Or do we riot?
I think it was awesome and refreshing. Because it was plainly obvious at the time that, you know, he'd shortened the bench and we looked dog tired, and, you know, we got pinned in our own for 5 straight minutes. They subsequently scored 3 straight goals. We managed to pull it out in overtime. I really hate when coaches, management, anybody who stands in front of a microphone and tries to sell me something that I know is not true. Mm-hmm. Nothing bothers me more. And, you know, whether or not that's good for his bottom line or his brand, probably not as much, but it's honest and I respect that. Full stop.
Completely agree. You know, I think what we're seeing from the Jets, especially on the 6-5, is the old model under Maurice. There was a lot of times under Maurice when they would get in trouble in their own zone. They would be, everyone stop, nobody move.
Yeah.
And the
wave your stick around.
I kind of get it. It's like the last thing we want to do when we're in trouble is start running around and creating more problems. If we just take our zones and stay in our zone and stop running around, we're not going to tire ourselves out. We're not going to get outflanked on one side or the other. Just stop moving. And they haven't changed that, because that's what I saw in these 6-on-5 situations over the past 3 games. Or the two of the last 3 games in which we've been in those situations, is the Jets stopped moving their feet. Now, when the Jets have been really good, they're moving their feet. They're in the high press. They're anticipating where the puck's going.
Yeah, exactly.
They're getting on people quickly. And when they get in trouble, they start puck watching. They stand around in their own zone and they don't move. So I think there needs to be a reset button hit here.
That can be coached.
That can be coached. It is a coachable situation, but it looks like they've fallen into old bad habits when they're in 6-on-5. Just don't move and allow the defenseman a lane to shoot from the point. I mean, no one can get the puck on net anytime throughout the course of the game. Then all of a sudden
we get 3 lanes to the net with 3 guys, you know, in front.
Exactly. So it's a bit frustrating. So, but I appreciated the candor, as you mentioned, and you know, I had an old professor that used to say the proof of the pudding is in the eating, which means we'll see if they change. Is this going to continue to be a problem through the rest of the season? Or, you know, is this something that he's going to put his finger on and
can't get
fix?
Worse?
Can't get worse.
All right. Thanks,
Those
buddy.
Are my 5 questions. What do you got?
I had, you referenced it earlier, but legitimately, without the clever puns, do you think Josh Morrissey is right now a legitimate Norris candidate?
No, we got our Lady Bing last year. We are good.
Oh, you went conspiracy-wise.
Oh, I love conspiracy theories.
You do.
I think I don't think so. I really don't. It's a great question. We should probably be paying more attention to that so that we can inform that. Because I think in the eyes of Winnipeggers, Jets fans, and the local media, he's having a Norris-type season.
Right.
I don't know how that – like, how is Cale Makar doing this year? I have no idea.
Right.
How is Victor Hedman playing this year? I have no idea. Yeah. Like, in a situation where maybe some of the top defensemen have an off year and he continues to play this way and we finish pretty good in the standings, maybe he's in the debate. But because it's a voted-on award, it's a bit of a popularity contest. And I think it will be a hard bar for him to leap over unless we were way ahead of everyone in our division. We were just destroying our division. We were the top team.
Yeah, best
hockey.
Team in the league. Yeah.
People are looking for reasons why, and they would pin it on something. And under those conditions, perhaps he might get high up and a finalist for the Norris. But again, I do think it's something that we should do some looking into and see how he measures up against some of the other best defensemen in the league.
Yeah, and I think part of this, so I agree. I think part of it, the Norris candidates or the Norris winners, the award itself has been bastardized to a certain extent. Like, it's supposed to be for the league's best defenseman, but typically and very recently, it's morphed into who's the best offensive defenseman. And right now, Josh Morrissey is sixth in defensive scoring. So already you're out of the nominations just on that factor alone. Again, he's not a defensive stalwart. He's great defensively. He had that great play on a 1-on-3 last night. He's clever with a puck, but I don't think anybody would rank him in their top 10 of defensive defensemen. And, you know, there's the expected goals per 60, and he's 24th. His average game score, he's 11th. Like, all of these factors mean he's very good, but not the elite of the elite. I mean, as you astutely pointed out, that doesn't take into consideration he's been on a real heater in November. And if he keeps this up, who knows? And I agree, you could revisit it at any time. But right now, I think he's probably out of the running. I think we get a little Jet-centric in that, well, he's just incredible and he's by far and away the best Jets defenseman. So he's a Norris candidate. But it's fun and I like it.
Absolutely. I think what we are seeing is the Josh Morrissey we've always hoped and expected to see.
There it is.
Just be you, Josh.
Yeah, you do you.
Just be you. You do you.
Okay, my last one. Is Hanel a good, or are we all just drinking the Kool-Aid?
Wow, it's a great question. So, because the question asks the person, me, to set aside the narrative, to set aside their biases, to set aside their hopes, dreams, expectations for.
Oh, look at you getting meta.
I honestly think he would make less mistakes than Sandberg. I think he's good enough to be in the top six, but there is something, sometimes when you're around someone 18 hours a day, something, it just doesn't rub you right about them, or you don't think they have a particular intangible
that thing
that you want your guys to have. And I don't know what it is with our organization and Finnish players. Finnish players tend to be, they tend not to speak a lot.
They're pretty quiet.
They're pretty quiet, reserved. He's not a physically imposing guy like a Metalainen, who's a big guy. You know, they just may want something different out of their bottom pairing that Heinola can't seemingly offer. But for me, I would play him. I think he's better than Sandberg. I mean, it's not like Sandberg's body checking people into the ice every night. I mean, I like the kid, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, his puck movement isn't great. I think Heinola, I thought was really quite good against Carolina. I don't know. Again, I didn't watch the Minnesota game. He might have been terrible in that game.
No,
I don't know.
Much of the same.
But again, back to, I think he's an NHL player. I really do. And it bothers me that we're sort of just hanging him out to dry. If we don't like him, get us another forward.
Exactly.
Move on, trade him. I don't know how many times we have to say this on this podcast, but I do think he's a top six player. I really do.
No, and I think it's, I suffer a bit from the chicken or the egg proposition, because, you know, in training camp and again in limited minutes, and then the limited minutes he's gotten thus far this season, he's looked average to below average.
Agreed.
You know, and so, you know, that leads me to believe, well, what am I standing on a soapbox for? If this guy, every time he gets an opportunity and I see him, it's a meh, then why does it in my core bother me the same as it bothers you that I think he's talented and I think he is a top six NHL defenseman? And I always come back to, it's because we haven't given him a shot and we haven't given him a chance. And every player develops differently. And I think given his age, his size, his playing style, I think more reps would lead to good things. But we just never give him that opportunity. And I think that, so that's the narrative part of, right, where you try and separate the narrative from the actual player talent. But I think if given the opportunity, you know, put them on with Schmidt. Let them play some high-event hockey for a couple games. I get it. It's not that simple. But I'm the same as you. Sandberg, Kovacevic, whomever. I think he's the most talented out of all those guys. And the power play sucks recently. Why not use that asset? Again, I am struggling a bit, though, in that when he does get it, and albeit sheltered minutes, you know, he doesn't stand out. And so it's getting harder and harder to make the argument against Hanel and naysayers to say, well, no, he just, trust me, he's really, really good. So I'm finding myself in a bit of limbo, which is exactly where the Jets are, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I think we talk about this because it is a defining vein in the overall narrative in the discourse on the Jets on social media, right? But I'll tell you what, if he plays every game, we're not 19-0, and we're not 12-6-1. Because he isn't playing a lot, right? He's our sixth defenseman at best. This is what is bigger is what is going on in the power play, right? So since the Dallas game where we played them at home, we've only scored power play goals in two of the last eight games, right? Against Seattle, we were 2-for-7. Against Anaheim, we were 1-for-2. Other than that, we haven't scored since going 3-for-4 against Chicago all that while ago.
Yeah, that was
so. So if we want to look at what's going to drive the success going forward, it's not going to be whether Hanel is in the lineup or not. Broadly, yes, he could help the power play. I give you that. But again, we're not going 2-for-2, 3-for-3 every night because he's on the power play. He's not the silver bullet that will fix the power play. There are bigger issues there. So I would like to see the narrative being more about how are we going to fix the power play? What's going wrong with the power play? Is there enough movement? Talk about those types of things, whether as opposed to the laziness of, well, you know, if Hanel is in the lineup, then it's all great. And if Hanel is not in the lineup, like, it's like, who's our 12th forward? That's not going to make a difference in the game, right? It's not going to make a tangible difference in the game. Changing our power play, getting it going, will make differences going forward. And that's where I'd like to see the broader narrative and discussion going. What's wrong with the power play? And I'll tell you what, the suggestion that Hanel could help the power play is valid. The idea that Hanel fixes the power play is putting way too much on Hanel, and it goes way too far.
Well said, sir. Well, on that note, you want to take us out?
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.